Yes. Okay. All right, let me continue with the disclosure initiative.
Who's got to?
Amy, is it here?
Yeah, Amy's gonna take this.
Amy?
So we have three papers on the amendments to IS1 exposure draft, and I'm going to go through agenda paper 11BA. And that paper sets out our analysis on the disclosure initiative amendments in that amendments to IS1 exposure draft. So we presented the summary of the feedback we received on the exposure draft of the ISB last month. The feedback we received was generally supportive, and some specific issues were raised by respondents. So in this paper, we've set out those issues which we think justify separate reconsideration by yourselves. And we've got three sets of questions for you. So the first issue is about ordering of the notes amendments, and our recommendations are in paragraph 18 of the paper. We recommend that the ISB should finalise, subject to drafting, the amendments regarding the ordering of the notes, and that the amendment should be drafted in a way that emphasises that entities should use judgment when determining the order of the notes, and the final amendment should not promote one way of ordering the notes over another. And the question is whether you agree with that recommendation.
I just wondered whether we needed an example. Putting an example in there, are you just going to confuse people again? And you make it clear that they've got to use judgment on how they order the notes, and then you give them an example. Why would you do that?
So we've got the exposure draft had two examples in it. So one was the existing example in IS1, which was that more structured ordering of the notes, and we put in another example in the exposure draft about reordering to emphasise importance or grouping information together. So, for example, the fair values and financial instruments. So we did have two examples, and in drafting, we were just trying to emphasise they were both examples. We weren't trying to promote one over the other.
So you're going to have them both in the standard?
Yeah, because I think one of the problems that we had previously, we had one example, and people took that as a default or a requirement in terms of order. So we wanted to emphasise that by providing two examples, it was clear that the one that was described there was not the only one that people would should follow.
If you had no examples, it would be even clearer.
We could take it out.
Well, yeah. I just question why we would do that. You're saying use your judgment to work out how you order your notes, then how can you give an example of people using their judgment?
Well, it was just to illustrate that there's different ways of doing it. I mean, in some ways, we were trying to clarify that there were different ways. And I think if we just left it open, I think...
I think the difficulty is that there is an existing example that's been there. If we simply take the example out, people will assume they should carry on doing what they've been doing, which is actually what we're trying to change.
Yeah. You think people are that stupid?
I just think people will continue. You continue doing what you've been doing in the past. That's the easiest fallback position.
I would also say I don't think we had feedback to say that people were adverse to including an additional example. There was feedback that some users in particular, were concerned about providing that flexibility, but not the addition of an example.
I agree with the staff recommendation. The only thought that I had was, presumably if an entity has made a choice about how it orders its notes and nothing goes on, it would be helpful for users of financial statements if they were consistent over time. So I just wondered whether it would be useful to make an observation in the basis that you know, consistency of the ordering might be the expectation of nothing, if there was no reason for a change. There wasn't, you know, you hadn't changed your business or something, just to encourage it over time.
This was also Philip's point.
Yeah.
Stephen?
Is there an order of the notes that's unacceptable?
It's the second example, Stephen. On the distribution.
I would think it would depend on whether it is a fair presentation. At some point, I think you could argue that perhaps the order may obscure information, but I don't think there's anything in IFRS to say there's an order that you cannot do.
In that case, how can anybody use their judgment? If we're not saying what you shouldn't do or what's unacceptable, and everything is okay, then surely to say use your judgment, we have to give some sort of objective, something you're striving for. If the striving is just, well, what's best communication, it's all very vague. Why don't we just remain silent?
We've said that an entity should consider both comparability and understandability when determining that order. I think so there is an objective there. So you wouldn't make an order to make things less understandable or less comparable. There needs to be some basis for that decision, and determining that requires judgment.
Mm-hmm. Materiality or not, is it a factor in deciding the order, materiality or significance? Maybe not materiality. I mean, maybe one way to present is to put the more significant things first and the less significant at the end. Maybe that's one way. That's an objective of making the financial statement more understandable. Call it materiality, call it significance, I don't know. But I mean, a bit like Steve, you cannot use just your dice and say random distribution of my notes.
Well, I think the way that the standard provides at the moment is that you could follow the order that you've got in your financial statements. That's a systematic order. It tends to be comparable across entities, and so there's a reason why you might do that, because it enhances understandability or comparability. You might determine, like Philippe just said, to put the significant, the more important things first. Again, that could provide some additional information that makes the financial statements more understandable. You have some choices there, and I think an entity needs to determine which way it wants to go. Does it want to perhaps keep with an order that it's always had because it's comparable across time and because it's comparable with its industry colleagues or competitors? Or does it actually say, by reordering, I could provide some additional information to my investors that makes what I think is important to me more understandable?
Fantastic help.
Are you saying that doesn't need judgment, or that we should?
Well, there's judgment required in terms of effective communication. Absolutely, you can have a set of financial statements which are very difficult to read, don't really know where to look for things, and there are financial statements which are well ordered, presented, and you can easily find things. But is that the job of accounting standards, to provide education about communication? Or is accounting standards about saying you will give disclosure of a roll forward of an insurance liability?
And I think that's a good point. It comes up a little bit in a paper that we'll bring on Friday about communication principles. And what, you know, taking a step back, should we be providing guidance on how entities want to communicate their financials? There's a limit where things can't be misleading or obscuring, but to what extent do we want to try and promote good communication, and to what extent can we do that? Now, the feedback we've had so far on the conceptual framework and the work we have done in the disclosure forum, people want more guidance on good communication, and actually IS1 already contains some of that information, and we're trying to build on that. So my response is actually people are seeking that from
is this is not education on good communication. This is simply saying you must think about how you can best present it, and then we don't tell people how to best present it. We're not trying to guide them. We're allowing whatever principles they've already developed wherever else, perhaps in Friday's discussion, to guide it. But we're not trying to tell them how to do it. And I think that's the important thing about this, is we're saying you need to think about it, but we're not going to tell you. The accounting standards are not going to prescribe the way you communicate.
But should an accounting standard say, think about it?
Well, is that not what that sentence is doing, that says, think about the understandability and the comparability? Which is in this.
And I think the reason this amendment was proposed in the first place was because people were reading the language and felt prevented from using that judgment.
I'm fine with removing the, you have to have it in this particular order, which is the way people read it. No problem with that. But accounting standards that say, think carefully or do the right thing.
But the dilemma, if you say, use your judgment and make sure you present it the most meaningful, with the most important emphasized, for example, that actually almost conflicts with the way that a lot of people do it by doing the order of the items in the primaries. So you don't want to create an internal inconsistency within the standard. So I kind of agree. You could put some words in to guide them a bit, but it might end up conflicting internally until we finish the major project. This is an amendment to give them permission to do to present in a more flexible way.
To break the mold, we may have to do this. Gary?
Thank you. I support the staff's recommendation for all the reasons stated. I think it's fair to assume that most preparers will take a judicious, reasoned approach to this. Considering how late it is in the year, my instincts tell me we're not going to see a lot of changes for this calendar year's year-end reporting. It's getting late in the year, but you'll see some. But I think it's fair to assume most people approach it professionally. I would disagree with saying you should put the most important notes first, although philosophically I agree with that answer. I wouldn't want to see the world put into debating, well, what are the most important notes? And to some extent, it's what the reader wants to read first is the most important note to a reader, which might be very different from what the reader in the next room wants to read first. So I think allowing judgment and using a phrase we used several months ago, unshackling the preparers, giving them a bit of flexibility is what this is about. My question, Christy, is does this extend to be able to distribute the accounting policies through the notes, or is that something, another paper coming? I just don't remember where we were on that.
This does extend to being able to distribute the accounting policies.
And I agree with that. It just wasn't prominent in this paper. I just wanted to confirm this.
Because it was non-controversial. I think everybody agreed with.
Okay. I'm good. Thank you.
I think most people, even some users who disagreed with changing the order of the main notes, there was some suggestion that they were more in support of splitting the accounting policies.
My instincts on my practice will actually change slowly. But there will always be some thought leaders who break out early. The world will look and see what happens, and then others will come up in the vanguard.
Beryl?
I think in some ways the difficulty with this, and Hans, you used a phrase a second ago where you said breaking the mold. I think in some ways what we're dealing with is we're dealing with an established practice which has chosen to interpret the words in a particular way. And we may even think that some of these changes are not necessary, but they're necessary to the extent that they help people break the mold. At the advisory council last week, one of the members of the advisory council pointed to financial statements that he's involved with, where they have already looked at what we're proposing and said, well, we can do that already, so let's start the process. And I suspect what will happen, Gary, is you're exactly right. People will look at this, realize it gives them a certain amount of freedom, start looking around for best practice, and start seeing whether that best practice works. And the particular financial statements that were referred to at the Advisory Council have specifically chosen to break out the accounting policy and put them in the notes. And I think people will start to copy it quite quickly. So I think change might happen quicker than we expect, because this is something people have wanted to do for a while.
I agree with Steve, what he has said, because I think we should make it now open and people should use the order if what they want, but we should not really focus the drafting based on judgment, because you have to always use judgment. And now, why should we emphasize here? And if we say judgment on what, and if we say judgment about comparability and understandability, then I think again it will force preparers, okay, housing auditors, regulators about that, what comes first, comparability or understandability. So I think we should make it free, but don't really in the drafting focusing on people should use judgment, and because I think that will restrict them to make it more complicated, and they have to document why all that, and I don't know if that is really worth it. So direction is clear, but not really focusing on this judgment in there.
Stephen?
When we talk to investors on this, some of them say, just give me a set order because then I can know where to look for things. Others emphasize the importance of an index and hyperlinks and searchable documents. Are we going to say anything on that?
Not in these proposals, but it is something that we would look in the Principles of Disclosure project, because these are clarifying. I think talking about either requiring or encouraging or somehow asking people to use an index or a hyperlink is something more. To some extent, it is embodied in, if you know, we put in these communication principles, it would be embodied in that type of thought process. The question is whether we'd want to do something more specific is a further question, which would be Principles of Disclosure.
Can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
It's an amendment to say and giving due consideration to the consistency. That was on my proposal.
In the basis of conclusion,
yeah. 13 in favour? Oh, you are, but all in favour.
Okay, anyone else?
So the second issue is about proposed amendments regarding subtotals. And this is on the question is on pages 9 and 10 of the paper, and there are four parts to this question, so I'm going to go through them individually. And actually the first question is about whether you agree to finalise these amendments, so I thought we should come back to that one after going through the others. So the second question here is whether the ISB agrees that the requirements for subtotals in the statements of profit or loss and other comprehensive income and the statement of financial position should be consistent.
Rather than inconsistent. Pat?
My observation is on the first question, but obviously consistency I think makes a lot of sense. With respect to the first question that you're posing, the way the paper is drafted, I couldn't necessarily say I'm in agreement or disagreement because it's vague, because you say it's subject to drafting. I've had a concern about this whole area, obviously from the jurisdiction in which I've come from and familiar with. It's not permissible to provide non-GAAP information on the face of a statement of comprehensive income in the U.S. under Regulation G. And there is a potential that this approach would, in fact, provide additional incentive or authorization to do so. I understand from a CMAQ member from our CMAQ meeting a week ago that, in fact, Australia has a similar regulation, similar to Regulation G. So if we're going to go down this path, I would fully recommend that the staff take into consideration the recommendation that IOSCO provided in their comment letter to the staff on how to deal with whether to include paragraph 85B or not. I think it's good counsel. I think it works. It satisfies me. One of the things, you know, as an analyst, I was always concerned with when somebody presented a number called EBITDA on a P&L, did it include restructuring charges or exclude them? Did it include litigation costs or exclude them? And so without reconciling on the face of the P&L what is in or out of that subtotal, you don't know, and you could be misled. But notwithstanding, even if we can get the endorsement of IOSCO, I would encourage you to go speak to the staffs of these securities regulators in Europe, Asia, and the U.S. and ask them, are they on board with this? Because the last thing I would want to see is a foreign private issuer filing in the U.S. using now this new amendment approach and having the SEC saying, that doesn't fly here, or Australia saying, that doesn't fly here, and then creating a headache. So I think we need to do a little bit more outreach and homework to ensure that what we're proposing here is going to work for them.
Can I just clarify that what we're proposing is not a new requirement or a new possibility of adding an additional subtotal. That is a requirement in IS1 at the moment. Well, what we're proposing is just to say that if you do follow that requirement in IS1, that the information, we've tried to put some information to ensure that the presentation of that subtotal is what we would call a fair presentation. So it's really trying to interpret the fair presentation language in IS1 that's currently there and bringing it specifically to the subtotal. So we actually feel that it was giving some more discipline to a requirement that already exists in IS1.
Sue?
I had also some questions on the proposal not to proceed with 85B. Having been to a number of meetings with IOSCO, this comes up all the time, this concern about subtotals and what subtotals are allowed to be IFRS compliant. There's differences of views and concerns about whether users of financial statements could be misled by these sort of novel subtotals that people come up with that highlight particular perspectives, if I can put it that way. My understanding is that you don't really think that you need paragraph 85B in the sense that if somebody was to come up with a new subtotal, say for example, I don't know, sustainable operating profit or something like that, with all the nasty stuff gone, that you'd need to show the material line items that got you to that number and that gets you from that number to something like net profit after tax. So in a sense, 85B was a little bit superfluous to you, and I think in your understanding. But partly I think it was because there was concerns about the drafting of 85B. And if it was more about the drafting, I also wondered whether the wording that IOSCO suggested in their letter was helpful by making it clear that the idea was to present line items that got you from whatever subtotals you had presented to the ones that are required by IFRS, because that sort of took a little bit of the ambiguity out of the words that some people saw. Because while I sort of agree with you might get there, I'm wondering whether it's helpful to make it clear that we want you to get there in terms of explaining the steps.
Just is it worth me just reading out the proposed wording which IOSCO had, which was they felt that in terms of 85B that the reference to excluded item was not clear. So their suggestion was to that sentence could be clarified by saying that an entity shall present line items in the statements of profit and loss and comprehensive income that reconcile any subtotals presented in accordance with paragraph 85 with the subtotals and totals specified in this IFRS. So it's asking it's clarifying that if an entity presents a subtotal in accordance with the provision that's already in IS1, that line items should be presented which in effect get you from that subtotal to the next total specified in IFRS. Our feeling had been that and Amy can go through some of the drafting we're thinking of for some of the other in 85A, but our feeling was that the requirement in IFRS at the moment to present any line item which is material or provides relevant information would actually require you to present those intervening subtotals, and therefore a discussion was kind of an additional add-on. Now I can see that, actually again Amy brought this point up, but a lot of what we doing here is seeming like it's adding additional information to some basic principles which are already in IS1. And so I think our perspective of being given the ambiguity around the current wording, we felt that actually being more specific with the wording in 85A would enable us to get there. But I think we maybe have slightly different views.
I quite like the IOSCO wording. I think removing entirely that particular paragraph, I'm uncomfortable with it, because we put it in for a reason, which was to try and ensure there is transparency over these items. So if we have sustainable operating profit, it has to be clear, I think, on the face exactly what's in there and, more importantly, what isn't in there. And we don't want people getting around it by saying, above it is sustainable admin costs and below it is not sustainable admin costs or something like that. So, and I know what will happen if we're not really clear in the standard, that we'll get rubbish like that. And to Pat's point about EBITDA, yeah, sometimes it excludes restructuring costs, sometimes it doesn't. If somebody has an EBITDA label on the face, we need to make absolutely clear that the reconciliation is such that you have to be able to see what's in there and what isn't, and not bury it somewhere in the notes.
Philippe is going to...
Same view as Steve. I think we may clarify further what we mean by excluded. That is the issue. To have a clear requirement by just eliminating the requirement is too easy, I think. No, it's important. I don't want to see, like Steve said, a statement of performance with an amount, definition, maybe made up of recognized items and measured in accordance, but made up by the company, and then the required amount by IS1 and no reconciliation with them. So how do I do that? Now, whether it should be in the notes on the face, I'm more flexible, maybe, depending on whether it's really very different or not. If it is slightly different, maybe can be, you know, if it is completely different, but different discussion.
Mary?
Support the suggestion by Pat, Sue, and others to retain paragraph 85B or some variant of it. I again, some combination of drafting in the main, in the standard, and in the basis for conclusions to make clear that we're not trying to undercut what is not just a permission, but a requirement to present additional line items when those line items are material and necessary to, you know, understanding the performance of the entity, but to go on to say, you know, I think that the language you read is helpful, that it's got to be clear how you arrived at those amounts, because one of the problems, I mean, going back a couple of years, I remember in a meeting with some regulators, enforcers saying, we've had companies present P&Ls that, you know, statement of performance that when you looked at it, you realized it didn't add up, because there, you know, you were going from, let's say, what was labeled operating profit to another number and excluding line items that were expenses in there. And that happened despite the fact that we've had the requirement that you cite as a reason for maybe not needing to do something, which is that material line items have to be presented. So I think overall, between the standard and the basis for saying we're not trying to undercut that requirement, that's an important requirement, not just permission, but it has to be clear how you arrived at that, and it's got to be a complete statement.
Yep.
Would be helpful. So I would go back to more expansive commentary about that, but not necessarily the words we proposed. If we've had feedback that a variant could be more helpful.
So there might be a majority in the board in favor of retaining paragraph 85.
But using the wording from IOSCA.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a base.
Okay. Everybody agreed?
Martin? Yep. All in there.
Okay, so I think that was that part four of that question. Can I just confirm that question about the requirements being consistent? Was everybody agreed with that? This was about the prominence point bringing it up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does that decision we've just taken change that?
I don't think so, because that it was only proposed in the first draft loss and OCI, where I think we're talking about the made up of items recognised and measured in, you know, in accordance with IFRS, those requirements. Then that 85B was just the P&L OCI.
And that's okay. Where the problem has been.
Continue.
So the third part of this question was, does the ISB agree that it should not extend the requirements for subtotals to other areas in the financial statements?
That's the case.
And then Sorry, back up to part one. I should have restructured this bit. But does the ISB agree to finalise, subject to drafting, the amendments for subtotal requirements for the statement of profit or loss and OCI and the statement of financial position?
All in agreement?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. So the last question for the board is on page 13. And it asks the board if they agree to finalise the other disclosure initiative amendments proposed in the exposure draft, subject to drafting, and with the staff analysis and recommendations set out in the table in paragraph 40.
Such is the case.
Okay.
Yes.
Chairman.
All right, the next paper on our list is agenda reference 11B little b. Now, this paper discusses the amendment proposed in the exposure draft that deals with amending paragraph 82A and the guidance for implementing IAS 1 for an issue that was originally an IFRIC issue that arose in April 2013. Now, the purpose of this amendment is to clarify that 82A requires entities should present the share of other comprehensive income of associates in joint ventures, first of all, by whether those will or will not be subsequently reclassified to profit and loss, and secondly, that that amount should be presented in aggregate as a single line item. In other words, it's not mandatory to disaggregate that amount by nature. Overall, the feedback on this part of the exposure draft was overwhelmingly positive. Vast majority of constituents agreed strongly with the amendment and felt that it would clarify the requirement in paragraph 82A. There were, however, three points that the staff noted in the feedback analysis that we'll discuss in this agenda paper. First of all, there was some confusion raised about whether items of OCI, of associates and joint ventures, accounted for using the equity method should be presented before or after tax. And this deals mostly with paragraphs 90 and 91 in IAS 1, which I'll discuss during the analysis. Second, there were some respondents who asked for more broadening of the illustrative example in IAS 1. So they wanted a line item added that showed an item of OCI that may subsequently be reclassified to profit and loss, and that's because currently there's only a line item for an amount that will not be reclassified. And finally, there was a drafting comment, and that was to change associates and joint ventures to investee in order to align IS1 with IFRS 10 and IS 28. So the first issue I'll discuss is the tax issue. Now, we agree with the observation made that an entity's share of OCI of associates and joint ventures is after-tax and non-controlling interests. And secondly, we agree that that is specified only in the guidance to implementing IS1. However, our recommendation is not to add any more specificity or any more guidance around this issue, and the reason for that is because we think that based off the equity method, it's clear that the OCI of equity accounted investments is after tax. Now, paragraphs 90 and 91 in IS1 provide two different presentation options for the tax effects of OCI. However, these presentation requirements apply to the entity's amount and not to the associate or joint ventures tax. So these paragraphs will, rather than applying to the after-tax amount of the share of OCI, will apply to any subsequent tax effects that the entity may have on that amount. As such, we think that no changes should be made in that area. Secondly, we disagree with the suggestion to add more in terms of the guidance to implementing IS1 to illustrate an amount that will be reclassified. And the reason for this is because the guidance to implementing IS1 is not intended to be exhaustive and show every possible line item that could arise. And also, we think that the drafting in the exposure draft, particularly in the footnote, is substantially clear to demonstrate that there may be items that will be reclassified. And we think that that's also picked up in the revised paragraph 82A. Finally, we disagree with the drafting suggestion to change associates and joint ventures to investees. And the reason for that is because this is a very narrow scope amendment to simply paragraph 82A, and we think that any overall changes to terminology throughout the rest of the standard would be best left to a larger scope revision of IS1. So the question I'll put to the board is whether you agree to proceed to finalize the proposed amendment to IS1 as drafted in the exposure draft.
Do we agree?
Yes.
All in favor?
All in favor. Yes.
Okay.
Thirty more seconds.
I hope so.
30 more seconds. Say yes.
Staff would like to put forward the agenda 11BC. The paper presents a summary of the due process steps taken in the narrow focus project under disclosure initiatives, proposed amendments to IS1, and also it includes the transition and the effective date provisions for the final amendments. The paper seeks the ISB's decision whether the staff can proceed with the dowsing process for the final amendments to IS1. Page number 6 contains questions with regard to this from 1 to 6, starting from question number 1 on re-exposure. Question number two on permission to ballot.
Granted.
Question number three on dissent.
No dissenters.
Question number four on effective date.
An agreement.
Question number five on transition provisions. And finally, the proposed timetable.
Everybody in agreement.
Thank you. I just had one observation. And it's the one I made before. And that is, I think in the basis for conclusions or effects analysis, I think we should alert entities to the fact that if there are jurisdictions that, from a regulatory perspective, would not permit certain presentations, we should discuss that.
It's not clear to me that you're suggesting, sorry.
Well, we are aware that in the United States that you can't present the phrase EBITDA on the face of the income statement.
This would be the case in more than 100 countries.
Yeah, and we heard last week from a CMAQ representative in Australia that that's also the case. So I think from an effects standpoint, we should be aware that if we're going to propose something that most companies can't use, it's a... should be an effect that we should be alerted to.
Noted in the basis for conclusions.
Yeah, in the basis, that's what I suggested.
What we are saying here is not feel free to present EBITDA. What we're saying is there's an existing requirement that says that you've got to present additional line items, and we aren't, if they're material, we're not changing that. We're just amplifying it to say that if you do that, using the words IASCO presented, that you've got to make clear, do a complete presentation of what it is that you've arrived at. So I do not think that the amendment that we have agreed to finalize is either a permission or an encouragement to present EBITDA or something else that might be subject to.
And I respectfully disagree with you, Mary, because the words, the way I read it, if I'm a CFO of a company, will allow me to do exactly that. And all I'm suggesting is that while there are some presentations that are going to be completely fine and acceptable, others may not. And we should, I think, alert people on the basis to that.
That that this doesn't override any regulatory limits.
Exactly, that's right.
Yes, but this would apply to any piece of regulation that
that's
we
correct.
Issue.
That's absolutely right.
So, and then we do this for the first time, we have to do to all standards.
Yeah, and I'm also not sure that these unwitting investors will go and read the basis for conclusions so that they are alerted.
That's very possible, you're right. Yes, more for the preparer, right.
Okay.
It's a cost-benefit. Why do all this and then find out, oh, I can't do it? We're creating costs with no benefit.
Well, we leave it up to the staff to see what they can do in draft.
In applying judgment, be mindful
exactly.
that there are some additional requirements, and this is not supposed to override.
That's right.
Requirements.